All right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again. It is the Patron Zone as we bring more Season 40 content to your podcast feeds. Dom, how are you doing this week?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
I am doing well. It is currently the Patron Zone. This will potentially be released at a later date. I reserve at least the right to release this at a later date if it seems like an interesting thing to do. But I am excited to be diving in today, Dom, in a confessional draft for Survivor Season 40. Draft season is upon us as everyone is out there filming right now, and no one can come back and spoil anything just yet. Trying to get everything on the record. And to date this podcast, we are actually about 2 minutes away from it becoming May 31st, 2019. So Season 40 is still very much at the forefront of everyone's minds. And very excited, Dom, to dive in on this confessional draft. I think a fun twist on the standard kind of Survivor draft.
It's possible that it's only at the forefront of people's minds because you are the one keeping it there, single-handedly sustaining the interest in this hypothetical season, which may or may not actually happen. And you do reserve the right to release this or not release this, I guess. There could just be memory hold, and no one except the two of us will ever hear this, but I will try to keep this to a high enough standard that it can reach the ears of a wider audience.
Yeah, I think the move for something like this is to, I don't think it would make a ton of sense to release it like after the season is completely over, but I would say this, I will say we'll release this around the merge when season 40 is actually airing, so quite a ways from now. But hello to anyone listening in that time in the future, and hopefully season 40 is off to a good start at this point. But here we are still in 2019, Dom, and I think to just kind of quickly go through the way this is going to work, we obviously have 20 names here as usual on our draft boards. This is at least my third or fourth draft of this week, and I'm sure plenty more coming in the weeks ahead. But the confessional draft is what we're here to do today, and I think it should just be as straightforward as 1 point per confessional. Sound good?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, no bonus points for any other confessional-related activity. Nothing that even jumps to mind. But
I was going to say, I'm not sure what else you would be asking me about, but you could have, like, music underlaid if it's triumphal enough gets an extra point, or there are lots of different things you could play around with, but I think keep it short and simple.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know if, like, questions from Jeff is another thing I know people ask, like tribal council, tribal council questions is something that is in the... Let's just keep it at confessionals, and
We're definitely going to have the dumb, edgic legalese debate of, well, if someone is technically off screen but they're still talking, does that kind of... Yes, it does. Okay, we'll just figure that out as we go. There's no need to get some like written constitution down for this. This is meant to be fun, and we'll try and keep it that way.
So yeah, I think we can put Pia in charge of being the commissioner of this. Whatever chart of confessionals she signs off on is the official score we will use.
The Pia.
Wow. that barely even qualifies, but it is getting pretty late at night at this point, so I can't argue too much with that. Dom, we will do our standard snake draft. Do you have a strong preference on going number one or taking the 2 and 3 picks?
I don't, but as the winner of all of our previous drafts, I assume you reserve the right to decide which of us is going first or not.
Well, I was hoping you would just give one of those two answers so I could say that exact one would be what I would take, just to snipe you right away before even making a pick. But I, as the winner, as you have noted, of every previous draft we've done in a long time, at least, actually, fun just kind of Dom and Colin trivia. I don't even know how many of these podcasts exist still from the seasons in question, but when we used to do like snake drafts of seasons, you know, in the mid-20s, back when we first started this, I started something like 0-11 in snake. It was unbelievable how many snake drafts I lost until we started doing auction drafts, and I've really hit my stride subsequently, and I think that's carried over to various other forms of drafting. But it was genuinely pathetic how long it took me to win one of them. I realized we began this podcast in South Pacific, and it finally occurred to me in like San Juan del Sur that I've lost every Big Brother and Survivor draft we've ever done.
Well, this is just good storytelling, right? Our editor forced that to happen so that the hero of the story here can have a struggle and then redemption and then new challenges, and you can have a full story arc here.
Yeah, and the other note is, as referenced, I'm in way too many drafts and we're doing way too many of these draft podcasts. Hopefully someone out there, one person out there, can like keep a spreadsheet of... not necessarily even just the teams, but just what podcasts exist that we need to follow up on in terms of wagers. Dom, I'm willing to put another $20 US on this. Does that sound fair?
Sure. Why not?
I'm taking all your money, man. I'm not going to be satisfied until you're bankrupt. But I guess without much further ado, at the very least that I can think of, I will decide to go first in this draft, if that is agreeable with you, Dom. Are you okay with going 2 and 3?
It's actually not that agreeable, but I have no choice in this matter. There's no agency at all, so I will suck it up and take my punishment.
I'm glad you recognize the reality of the situation. You have never had a choice in any issues pertaining to this podcast, blatantly here against your own will. But moving forward to the draft itself, Dom, when I was constructing my draft board, honestly had a pretty hard time the entire way. I think this is going to be one of the bigger crapshoots that we've ever gotten ourselves into in terms of drafting. Like the highest value people could all easily be at the bottom of either of our boards, and at the simultaneously I could see a lot of situations where, you know, you take someone with the second or third pick who was 15th on my board or whatever. We're just all over the place in terms of draft prospects. I think a lot of it has to do with boom or bust prospects, probably, like who has a good chance of going deep and being a big character if they do find themselves in the end game. But one exception stood out to me, Dom, when I was thinking about if I did take the number one overall pick, where I would go. And I have gone out of my way to select this person first overall because I feel so much more strongly after giving it a little further thought that there is really just one person, as far as I am concerned, who is under pretty much any realistic scenario a lock to get at least 20 confessionals, assuming they make it like 2 or 3 episodes. I think it would take literally being the first one out for Boston Rob to not get at least 20 confessionals. And while I absolutely acknowledge the risk of him leaving early, I still think he's going to be one of the higher up people on the confessional count when the season is all said and done, even if he is out like episode 5 or 6, somewhere in there. And as we have seen historically, the sky is just completely the limit for Boston Rob confessionals when things go his way. He was the easy confessional leader in both All-Stars and Redemption Island. So number one for me. I know someone who is as big of a figure as he's been in the Survivor community for so long, he falls quite far in a lot of the drafts just because of the threat status on him. But when it comes to confessional draft, Boston Rob, my easy number one. What do you think of that pick, Dom?
Well, obviously, yeah. For all of this grandstanding about how this is so difficult this time and there's going to be no sniping because you might have two completely different boards and it's so hard to tell and it's boom and bust and whatever, Boston Rob is the easiest pick in any of these drafts for this number one spot in a confessional draft. And you, I think, installed yourself as having the first pick, knowing that you just won $20 in the process. It's a good hourly rate there, Colin.
I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly not counting it as $20 in the bank, even having Boston Rob on my team. I think the issue is, of course, in terms of if this were a confessionals per episode therein draft, Boston Rob would be the easy number one. The concern is how frequently he's going to go out with 10 episodes left in the season.
Sure, but even despite that, he's someone who, as you said, could easily be the modern day Jacob Derwin, where, you know, he gets more confessionals in his 2 or 3 episode stint than someone who makes a final 6 or final 5 gets in their entire run.
Right. Wasn't it like Jacob had more confessionals than Chelsea?
Right. I think the final list was something like Dom and Wendell and a few others, and then Jacob, and then half the people who are on the jury at that stage, like Angela and Sebastian and so on, just really couldn't hold a candle to the one and only Jacob Derwin.
That's crazy. And so, yeah, all right. Well, I thought I was making kind of an edgier pick than potentially you're selling this as, but it sounds like at least my rationale is ringing true with you as well, that Boston Rob is certainly going to be someone we're going to see plenty of out there on season 40, pretty much no matter what.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So it is over to you for the second and third picks.
So I think at this point the board truly is open. I don't
Yeah,
think it's as
this is
clear-cut
where it all
anymore.
falls apart for me on my draft board.
Right. So I don't know if this is even a good pick, but I have some kind of rationale for it, so why not? With my first pick, second pick overall, I will take Tyson Apostle. And it's a weird pick given that he and Rob were on the same season together, where they went out back to back, and Rob must have received three or four times the number of confessionals that Tyson had, and Tyson himself was basically invisible for the entirety of that season. And that was one of the criticisms at the time. For as much as there were so many fireworks and great things happening on that season, the fact that you brought back comedy gold in Tyson and Courtney and even Sandra, who had this 6-episode stretch where she had zero confessionals, which caused even her on the season that she won to doubt that fact, given that she was basically written out of the show. She was there, or he was there rather, with Rob, received basically nothing. And yet I think Tyson is the natural follow-up here, because since then he has come back and won. He is still firmly a fan favorite in the mix, someone who they know they can rely on for good confessionals, biting commentary, and he can be the first one to go to in any situation where they just need to fill some dead air. So I think Tyson is maybe not an easy pick or the obviously correct pick, but one I'm very happy to lock in, if only because I want to hear a lot of Tyson confessionals. I wouldn't certainly wouldn't mind that.
Yeah, I certainly hope this is a very good pick because I am always a fan of the Tyson Confessionals. He was number 5 on my board in this kind of just enormous second tier that I have here. So as far as I would be concerned, an absolutely defensible number 2 overall pick here, without a doubt. And another thing that I think is going to be interesting is the way that the genders end up being drafted here, because in doing some research, I was talking to a great friend of the podcast, Antonio Mazzaro, just talking about how just lost I was in terms of ranking these people for confessional likelihood. And he, being the most thorough man in the universe, was able to immediately link me to this document that shows who had the most confessionals of every season and how many the winner had, what percentage the winner had, who had more than them, if anyone. And the top of this board is almost exclusively men. And there are many other cases where even the women who are near the top were not even the highest confessional receivers in their season. And I think that's certainly going to be a trend I would anticipate continuing through the all-winter season as well.
Yeah, I don't think it would surprise anybody who is a fan enough of the show to be listening to our show to hear that, right? I mean,
Right.
I think that statistic or something like it was already at the top of a lot of people's minds. And for Tyson, in particular, these picks, they go come down to a combination of things. So it's how long you expect that person to last, how long you expect their, I guess, average confessional rate to be. So if they're lasting for a long time, but they're not going to get that many confessionals per episode, how much does that really count for? And then also, how likely are they to have some big episode where either they go down in flames or they really step into the spotlight and get half a season's worth of confessionals in one go? And I think Tyson's the type who really has you covered on all fronts. I think he's likely to make a deep run in the season for the reasons that we covered in one of our actual many season 40 drafts back in the day. He's firmly in that heroes versus villains, Boston Rob friendship set. And I don't think he's the biggest threat among those people. So if there's some kind of insurrection, I don't think he's going to be a target early. But also, he's vital enough to the success of that group that I don't think that group is going to turn on him before it's time. I mean, yeah, I could see Rob making a move maybe, but I think Tyson is going to be firmly embedded there to the point where he's going to make a deep run, even if he doesn't have a great chance to win in the end game. And then while he's there, as I said, I think he's just a bottomless well of excellent confessional material and quotes and so on. So I expect him to definitely be in the mix. And also, you have this backdoor option too of Tyson could very easily make some boneheaded mistake again and go down in flames. And if he does, that episode will be riddled with confessionals of him sounding incredibly overconfident, because those are the types of confessional that he's giving every single episode anyway, and they happen to just have those to draw on whenever that comes up.
Yeah, I'm looking at this chart, and it's unfortunately only updated through Kagayan, so some outdated material. But as far as the seasons it listed, it's still going to be accurate. Where I'm actually surprised to see Tyson on Blood versus Water only had 49 confessionals, which is 11% of the confessionals on the season overall, but only four more than Sierra Easton had there. I always think of that as a pretty heavy Tyson season for the most part, but pretty scaled back compared to some of the other winners. For instance, Sandra in Pearl Islands had more confessionals than Tyson in Blood versus Water, which blows my mind.
Well, maybe he should have just voted out his mom and he would have had some more screen time. Although, if we get an episode this season where Boston Rob has to vote out his wife, it's game over. There's no way I'm recovering from that.
I mean, that is the logical conclusion of the direction Survivor is headed.
Right. And now that we put that out into the universe, there's really no way anything else can happen, right?
It's already happened by the time people are hearing this on the main feed.
Well, yeah, and by the time we're recording this, I think it's something like day 9 out there in real time, the third person who just got voted out, maybe we're gearing up for a swap. I think now we have manifested it, the Boston Rob is going to turn on Amber at some point, and it's only a matter of time now.
I think we may have already geared up for a swap. If they go from 20 to 18 and put them in three tribes, we may have just had our first victim of the swap get eliminated.
Well, I don't know how they're getting 20 into three tribes, so there's some
funky
math. 20
into 18 into three tribes.
Oh, wait, so just two people are getting cut, or?
It's day 8. Two people have already been voted out in the first 6 days, and then they switch, and now there's a couple more days before the vote.
Okay, this all makes sense now. you cleared up your fuzzy math.
Okay, good. Dom, you have another pick now after Tyson.
Okay, I really don't know where to go from here, actually. I think if Rob was a clear one, I had Tyson as not a clear number two, but someone I was happy to take there. And it sounded like you had him pretty high, but not as high as I maybe did. So for my second pick, it is weird because I feel like whoever I let drop to you, you're going to snap up. And then by the time it gets around to me, I will just be just throwing darts at a board here with a blindfold on. I'm not going to have any idea who to pick.
I already have no idea, so don't worry about
it. Okay. Perfect. You could just be lulling me into this false sense of security here, but I have more faith in you than that. So, with my second pick, there are two people that I'm really eyeing here. I'm just going to take Sandra. For the disclaimer that I gave last time about how Sandra can win a season on which some of these other people are on and get basically nothing for the entire stretch. I imagine coming off of season 39, and this is a question which I didn't want to forecast a Sandra pick by, if I let her go for another round by just asking it before with Tyson and Rob, but bearing in mind that she is coming back on what we still assume will be the season aired before this, yes?
Yes.
Okay, so with that in mind, now that Rob and Sandra will be, if they weren't before for some reason, they will be at the forefront of anyone's mind who is watching here in season 40, does that mean that you have less of a focus on those two players or more? Because I could easily see Rob, and I don't think he would like this honor, but he'll accept it in this case. He could be the Russell Hans of the season, right? Where the preceding season, Samara in that case, or season 39 here, is just a warm-up act for the big finale, Heroes versus Villains or All Winners, respectively. And with that in mind, if Rob is the person you can rely on most of the audience to recognize, then why not just go back to Rob, right? And especially if you think Rob's going to be there for a long time. And likewise with Sandra, you have this figure who, even if she was the most boring confessional giver in the world, which she certainly is not, I think you would almost have to elevate her presence on the season anyway, just because you already did that in the previous season. So why not have that continuity in place?
So I definitely agree with the general logic of because Rob and Sandra are going to be on 39, that is probably going to be an edge for them when it comes to CBS having faith in the casuals, recognizing them and wanting to see them on screen. Even with that in mind, Dom, Sandra was number 19 on my board. You could have held off on this for a little while just because I think it is so likely she's not going to be around for more than like 5 or 6 episodes again. And even that may be optimistic. And we've seen before, I know I just referenced she had more confessionals in Pearl Islands in her winning game than Tyson did in Blood versus Water. But when Sandra won Heroes versus Villains and was surrounded by a bunch of other people who are big camera hogs, She was 26th out of the first 28 seasons in terms of confessionals by a winner. She had 27 confessionals over the course of that season. Russell Hantz had 68.
Yeah, and that's that. That figure will never not be shocking to me. But I think we've seen recently with Sandra on Game Changers, again, a hypothetical season which may or may not be happening in the future here, that when she settles into more of a normal role, they are willing to give her that screen time, even if, you know, it's on a season where they're giving literally nobody any screen time.
Yeah, and I think things have certainly changed at this point in time, where Sandra is, you know, Jeff is literally saying the Mount Rushmore of Survivor. They're carving giant sculptures of their heads that are 20 feet high to put on Ghost Island or whatever. She is, without question, someone who's going to have, I would guess, a pretty low floor, or a high floor, I should say, for as long as she is there. And whenever she gets eliminated, I'm sure it's going to be a fitting kind of swan song where it's going to be loaded with Sandra content. I think it's just optimistic to think that she's going to be lasting to even making the merge too often.
I think she makes the merge more than you're giving her credit for here. You know, we know that she loves to pregame, and she's with many of her friends on this cast, and they might decide that the same logic that many people have been susceptible to in the past, we can just let Sandra get to a certain point, knowing that we can then just take her out later. We're not going to have to worry about idols or immunities or anything else. You know, she will just be dead to rights the moment that we make that call. But also, if we both truly are completely firing blind here about who to pick, the two people who have like paper mache totems of them on the previous season and a good default to go to, I would say.
Okay, I can't argue too much with that logic, Dom.
There is the, like, I guess the Joe Anglin principle of, it's very clear that they can bring back a much loved figure as a returning player and give them really not that much at all, or at least much less than we were expecting. So Sandra could meet that fate again, but I have to imagine, if you're bringing her back for season 39 and then for 40, it's with the intention of at least featuring them pretty prominently in some capacity.
Yeah, I would imagine so. So there goes Sandra. 19, you know, I had her 19 out of 20. That was probably way too low, given your very compelling point about enormous papier-mâché heads. So it is back on.
Those really are the elephants in the room here, you know?
I hope they leave them out there for season 40.
Same. If there's just some, like, extended shot of the papier-mâché head, does that count as a confessional? Are we being loose with the criteria here?
Yeah. So back on me now with the 4 and 5 picks, and I am going to go a direction I've honestly just found myself going quite often in a lot of these drafts, but I just feel so good about this person making it deep, and hopefully and probably, I would imagine, getting a decent enough amount of content in the timelines where they do end up going deep. Give me Jeremy Collins. I know it's a broken record at this point talking about all of the reasons I believe in Jeremy this time around, but from a confessional perspective, he is someone who I think is honestly kind of underrated. I think he's always really engaging and enthusiastic in the confessionals, and I'm very much looking forward to hopefully a lot of Jeremy this time around.
Yeah, when I think back to Jeremy's first season, the word that comes to mind is enthusiastic. Absolutely.
Come on, Dom. He had a lot more he had a lot more to be about which to be enthusiastic his second time.
Sure, but we don't know if that's going to carry across to this season. And if it doesn't, then we could see a reversion to that old school Jeremy, who admittedly still did get a lot of confessionals. So I don't know if that's the breaking point. But I think Jeremy is a fine pick. I expect him to be there for a while, and he's a likable guy. I think the average man or woman on the street has maybe a vague memory of who Jeremy is. So he's someone who you can easily just re-energize that interest in by giving him a confessional here or there. So yeah, I don't hate that pick at all, although I'm not sure which other picks I would have hated. I think we are in that zone now where really anything goes.
Yeah, we are in the dartboard zone. I think Jeremy has so much equity, the same way I would say about Tyson, and probably Sandra and Boston Rob as well, is all four of the people who have come off the board to this point are very good at talking shit about other people and are doing it quite regularly, and that tends to make air.
That's a good angle, actually. Yeah. Although there are other people in this cast who are very good at talking shit, and that might get them voted out very quickly. So you have to balance that carefully.
Yeah. Well, I think actually to go hard in the opposite direction now with my next pick. Someone I wish I had more of in the various drafts I've done to this point, but feeling good, at least good enough to take her here. How about Kim Spradlin, just on the grounds that she seems to be in a good spot to be going deep and is, while not the same style of confessionalist as the people who have come off the board to this point, I think someone they do see value in her kind of commentary on the show. And maybe it's a bit of a reach. Maybe I'm just trying to talk myself into reasons to have Kim on my team here. But again, we're in the dartboard zone, and given how likely it seems to me that she could be making a deep run, absolutely no problem with taking Kim this early.
Yeah, Kim is not the soundbite type. There's no real witty banter involved. And one of the things that summed up the dystopian nature of One World for a lot of people was that confessional where in the one humorous moment, maybe in the season, that pig just arrived in camp, and Kim gave a very detailed and methodical breakdown of how the pig arriving in camp would affect her game and how it was really good for her on a strategic level. And that really just encapsulated the dreariness and monotony of that season for a lot of people. But even if the content is bad, the person delivering it is fantastic. And I think Kim goes down very well with the average audience. And for the type who, you know, the family that Jeff seems to mythologize, who's just watching at home with their kids, Kim is just like this very wholesome, likable, attractive person who's very easy to root for. And you know, you're never going to have to worry about what Kim is saying, right? It's never going to go down badly, because nothing that Kim has ever said has really gone down badly. So I think I actually do like that pick a lot. And you do also have this upside of maybe Kim just zombifies this entire cast and walks it to the end, and none of them have anything left to say, and so of course Kim is going to get the lion's share of the confessionals again, because no one else possibly could.
Yeah, so there goes Kim at number five, and I'm scrolling around on this confessional chart that I saw, looking for her name, and she was the confessional leader of One World. Not a huge surprise there, but 13th out of the 28 listed, still behind the likes of Jenna Maraska and tied with Brian Heidick, so certainly not someone running away with the confessional count.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So it is back on you.
So I'm going to go against the Mazzaro principle of just take all the men off the board as soon as possible here. Give me Natalie Anderson.
Okay. She was one of the next couple of people I had on my board. Again, someone we've been talking up big time in terms of her prospects of going deep, and certainly a very entertaining confessionalist. So I can't argue with this pick by any stretch.
Yeah, I've been high on her chances. I've come down a little bit on that, with some people suggesting that this block going into the season, the Rob, Tyson, Sandra block, could just overpower everything. And if that's the case, I don't know how much of a voice Natalie's going to have in that. She does have that connection to Jeremy, which maybe could get her foot in the door, but this could be the kind of thing where that itself is seen as a threat. Jeremy having this extra vote or this parachute or someone that he has this connection with that other people in that alliance don't, and he may be forced to sacrifice her for the greater good, if you want to put it in those terms. So I could see her getting clipped early just because of that, and because she also is not the type to keep her views to herself, really, which it does not bode well maybe for her future in the game, but does bode well for her confessional count. I think she is someone who will be sounding off very memorably for however much time she's there.
Yeah, we want to talk about all-time great Survivor shit talkers. Natalie Anderson's got to be in the conversation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so the more I think about this pick, maybe she even could be a steal here at number six.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you have another pick now.
Okay, so I will go in a completely opposite direction here for my second pick. I will take Ben Driebergen, who, you know, for as much as there are other more storied Survivor figures with better pedigrees on this board, Ben really encapsulates modern Survivor to me. And I think he'll encapsulate modern Survivor to an audience whose memories are so short that modern Survivor is all the Survivor there is. Right. There will be a lot of viewers out there who remember Ben, if only because of the cowboy hat. Maybe remember Nick Wilson, and I'm sure Boston Rob and Sandra and a few other people, but like, they're not going to remember even as far back as like Adam Klein or something. That might have slipped their minds completely. Whereas Ben not only is a recent figure, so there's some recency bias there, he is also the type of hero that Survivor nowadays loves to valorize. And this is a season, with a bunch of those people. You have Boston Rob, you have Jeremy, you have a bunch of others. So Ben is not the only guy left who could be a candidate for that, but he is someone who you could easily see making a deep run in exactly the same way as he made a deep run last time, where he gets to a certain point based on just normal, straightforward Survivor gameplay, and then once his goose should have been cooked, he's able to string a run together with idols and immunity and so on, and will be a big voice doing that for as long as he's there. You know, if you go back and look at Rick Devon's confessional count during his run, you're going to see something obscene. Ben's was not quite as horrific as that, but it could easily reach those levels again. So there's a chance that Ben maybe is the ultimate seal of the drafter.
Yeah, I remember at some point near the end of, it may even have been like once he won in like our season review podcast, whenever we were talking about the idea of Ben 2.0, I remember saying that cowboy hat is going to be something the casual fans remember and are drawn to. And Ben was pretty high up on my board of remaining players here for...
If you run out of ideas, that can be one of them, is hat draft for season 40. You know, you got Boston Rob, you got Ben. I'm sure some others will enter the mix as well.
Yeah, but I think there's genuinely something to that. They know Ben is going to be the most recognizable recent winner, I would guess.
Yeah, and I think it can't be understated how the Ben archetype is just what Modern Survivor explicitly embraces. Yeah. And endorses as their preferred winner. So even if Ben is not the winner, if he's the plucky underdog for long enough, he will rack up so many confessionals that the others will pale by comparison.
Yeah, I'm with that for sure. So there goes Ben Driebergen at number 7. It is back on me, and I am going to go with I'm going to take kind of a moonshot here potentially, because there is certainly some early boot upside here. Or downside, I should probably frame it as, in this capacity. But as far as confessional upside, I am struggling to see many people, with one glaring exception that I'm sure is not going to be coming off the board anytime soon. But in terms of timelines where they go, well, being super visible, I'm not sure who has as much upside as Parvati Shallow of the people who are left on the board. I feel like, yes, she could easily leave early and that would suck, but in the timelines where she is on the show for a little while, I feel like Parvati is going to be at least a noticeable character pretty much no matter what, right?
Yeah, Parvati is a fantastic shit talker and shit talky. She has been living rent-free in other surviving contestants' heads for the better part of 15 years now, and I fully expect that to continue on this season.
Yeah, for sure. So feeling good about Parvati there at number 8, and with the number 9 pick, I think I'm going to go back to my tier of people that I just have a bunch of faith in to be going deep quite regularly, and of that group, the person that I think will get the most confessionals is, hold for dramatic effect and to kill time while you decide, Adam Klein. Come on down, why not? It was a toss-up between Adam and one other person for me, but I'm ultimately going to go this direction just because I feel like Adam is louder and that gives him more confessional upside and probably more of a shit talker.
Yeah, in the formula of volume plus relevant content plus, you know, likability, whatever, Adam definitely has some of those metrics covered, but I don't know if that's going to shake out to a high actual confessional count. I think Adam could easily end up just purpled on this season based on, you know, if he's irrelevant to the strategy of the season and he doesn't have that same emotional hook that his storyline had the first time around. And that storyline was quite heavily tied to his finish on the season, right? Like the amazing story of Adam and his family and so on relies on him winning in order to complete that narrative, in order to win and then make it home and be able to deliver that news just, you know, before tragedy occurs. So if Adam is like the second jury member on this season, where's the beef? Like, what are you getting out of that to make him more than just one more person on the season?
Well, I mean, I just think of Adam as someone who's going to be in the mix for whatever length of time he's on the show. He's going to be playing hard and be involved in, I would imagine, or at least attempting to be involved in the decision making and be engaging in confessionals when talking about the game. And compared to at least some of the people left on the board, I'm not sure if that's a certainty.
I would say Adam is an underrated shit talker as well. He's got that Ivy League, like, polite but not actually that polite kind of vibe when he is passing judgment on people. So I could definitely see him in the mix just in terms of passing judgment on someone else's horrific strategic blunders.
Yeah, and that's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm excited to get points for when that happens.
Perfect.
All right, it's back on you.
Okay, so we're going a high upside pick here to borrow your understatement of the year when talking about Pafty. There is a little bit, just a tad of early boot downside with this person, but give me Team TV. I want him on my roster here.
Okay, yeah, and when I said that, I said something to the effect of, like, I'm guessing he's going to stay on the board for a little while, but apparently not, Dom. Apparently the early boot upside or downside, depending on your perspective, for Tony is a risk worth taking when it comes with so much confessional upside in the timelines where it goes his way.
Right. I fully expect to be getting like zero the bare minimum points from Tony a good percentage of the time, but then the 5% of the time that he does make a deep run, just give me my $20 back, you know? Yeah. It's just lock it in.
Yeah, and there's not really anyone else on the board at this point who you can feel good about that. I think a lot of the people, pretty much genuinely everyone, I'm looking at the board remaining, is someone who is almost understated, I would say, whereas Tony is so energetic, and that's a tremendous understatement.
If there's ever a lull in the action, just give it over to Tony. He can definitely spice things back up again. And he's often not, interactions with Cass and others, mainly Cass though aside, he's usually self-centered, if you like, in the sense that he's focusing mostly on his own schemes and what he's doing and his crazy plans, but those also are exciting enough to carry the action, so he doesn't need to be throwing shade at other people to get some attention. He can get that all by himself.
Yeah. So I was hoping I could potentially snag Tony in one of the later rounds, but he was near the bottom of my board, but I will happily grant that the scenario where he does end up making a deep run, you're just going to run away with this draft. So that would be super exciting, especially because I cannot imagine many scenarios where both Tony and Boston Rob are deep in the game.
Yeah, I think that's basically just an impossibility. There's definitely the only one. Well, what's the quote? Like, only one can live while the other survives? Or it definitely can't be that, because that doesn't make any sense.
Isn't that like Harry Potter? What's the Harry Potter?
It's not like Harry Potter. It is Harry Potter, except that what I'm saying is not Harry Potter because I mangled the quote so badly that it's beyond recognition. But you see what I'm getting at.
I thought you were a Harry Potter fan, but apparently not, Dom.
I am. I just can't quote it verbatim on cue.
It is mind-blowing to me that we are coming up on, it's like 7.5 years of doing podcasts, and you've never podcasted about Harry Potter.
I may have to do that again now that you've thrown down the gauntlet.
Yeah, it won't be with me. Let me put that one out there. I am beyond a casual in the Harry Potter world, but it is something that I would have thought would have happened by like 2014 at the absolute latest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So shame on you for that, and all the listeners are disappointed, and I've lost track of whose pick it is.
I believe it's mine again, right?
Okay.
So I took Tony. Who is left on the board? Are you keeping track of the housekeeping here?
I do have. I will be fully honest. I just noticed that I was missing a name from my board this entire time, but I have recognized it, and I'm not too worked up about not realizing they weren't there earlier. So I do have the full board, yes.
Okay, so for the listeners at home, I believe the people left are Sarah, Amber, Sophie, Danny Boatwright, Denise, Wendell, Ethan Yule, Michelle Fitzgerald, and Nick Wilson. And of those, I think the person that I want to snap up right here, give me Ethan Zahn, actually. Ethan's a curious one for this draft in particular, because I don't expect him to be that heavily involved in the strategy, not just because you know, his play style is very different from most of the people here. And personality wise, he's the type to just kind of go with the flow and blend in and not really assert himself like that. And I don't know how well dialed in he is to the rest of this cast. I know we had some feedback from our season 40 actual draft, real draft, first draft, whatever, that he is maybe more in the mix there than we're giving him credit for. He's more firmly integrated and embedded in that scene. But even if that's the case, I could see him end up as just the guy who is such a big social threat, who seems like the unknown quantity to a lot of people. It's easy to get this consensus together to just ice him out of the game and have the game move forward. But I think while he's there, Ethan is such a useful contrast to the hyper-strategic focus of everybody else that it makes sense to go back to him. And there are a lot of fans out there, really old-school fans who have been watching from the beginning, for whom Ethan, after 20 years almost, is still their favorite survivor of all time. And it makes a ton of sense to throw some meat to those people, although I think a lot of those are vegetarians or vegans, so throw something else to them, maybe, by just giving them as much Ethan content as possible for his time there.
Yeah, I agree that he's going to get at least some in the way of kind of representing the old school contingent. My concern is, as you flagged up, he's just not going to be virtually ever the one explaining the strategy or the one off looking for idols and explaining his miraculous idol discovery. I would imagine Ethan, even if he does go deep, is going to have plenty of episodes with zero confessionals, as much as it may bum out the people who've been waiting 20 years for this moment.
That would not shock me at all, but I think it does make sense to check in with Ethan every so often, just because he is, as you say, really the only old school player left on the cast. So you have Sandra, who I don't think really qualifies as an old school player anymore, when she came back for a season in the 30s and is remembered mainly for Heroes versus Villains, right? Which really handed the torch over to new school survivor. And you have Amber, I guess, who no one is even counting on to give many confessionals or to really carry the mantle for the old school seasons. Whereas Ethan really is the big representative of that time period of Survivor. Now that Hatch and Tina are off the board, mainly because they're off the cast, then there's, you know, Ethan is the only one flying the flag still.
Yeah. Right. So there goes Ethan. I just don't know where he would be. One of the people that I would say has one of the lower ceilings, like some of the least upside in terms of even situations where he does go on to win. I don't think it's virtually ever going to be the case that it's just the Ethan show.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So there goes Ethan, and it is now back on me. It really is interesting that we had like 10 extroverts come off the board first, and now we're just going through the introverts as far as their first winning season was concerned.
Or maybe just boring extroverts, you know?
Maybe. But of these boring extroverts, you know what? It's been too long. This pick may surprise people, but I feel at least all right about the prospects of, in timelines where things can go her way again, give me some Michelle Fitzgerald. It seems like they were heavy with the gas pedal on Michelle in the timelines where things go her way. Happy to grant that the possibility of being completely overlooked is absolutely on the table this time around, but maybe they want to prove a point to the people like me, or maybe they just suddenly decide Michelle is someone they want to start highlighting. I, at this point, am happy to have Michelle back on the team.
Okay, there may be some revisionist history going on here, because as I recall, the argument that we highlighted for Michelle back in like episode 4 or 5 of Ko Wrong, it wasn't that she was getting so many confessionals that it was impossible to ignore, is that based on her current position in the game, it would not be a surprise if she had zero confessionals. And the fact that she was getting 2 or 3 maybe every so often, and those were very carefully placed and just had exactly the right content to clue you in to her eventual outcome, that was what we really seized on as proof that she was going on to win. So in a draft which is firmly focused on quantity over quality, I don't know if that logic holds up, even if that exact same thing comes to pass once again.
Sounds like a bunch of malarkey to me, bro.
You were just ready to drop that, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
I looked forward to busting that quote out many times over the course of the season, if Michelle lasts for a long time, which I imagine she will, because there's not going to be an obvious reason to get rid of her, right? She's guaranteed to be like this late pre-merge at worst boot, maybe early post-merge if it comes down to that. So she'll be there, but I think her average will be pretty low.
Okay, I'm not going to be super shocked if she's even lower on the list than plenty of the people who have yet to be drafted. I just feel like she is someone they have very little faith in the audience to pick up on themselves. And so in the timelines where she does become someone they want focused on, they will be a bit heavy-handed about it.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I have another pick here. And at this point, he's been very near the top of my board for a while, and I keep finding reasons not to take him because I have had him in so many other things. But at this point, why not? Wendell, just because of how good I feel about his chances of going deep, he is a recent winner, and he is certainly a interesting enough speaker, to say the very least. I am happy to once again be selecting Wendell for like the eighth time in the last month.
Okay, anything to add to your previous observations on him?
Nothing in particular, just generally feeling good about him being there for a while.
So do you have all the confessional counts for the seasons to hand?
Just the first 28. No, and it's not even all...
You don't have the first 36 by any chance?
I don't, unfortunately.
Okay. So in Wendell's case, he had Dom who got both more confessionals and louder confessionals, and also just deep confessionals most of the time, but Wendell was usually in the mix with a few, even in his off episodes, right?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. So, just again, he has not the exact Ethan personality, but that same aspect to him where you can see in the episodes where there's no obvious reason to go to him, they'll maybe toss him something just because it's always good to check in with Wendell, but I don't know if he's going to have any breakout episodes where he's getting twice as many as the next highest person.
Right. Again, I think we have been for a little while in the territory of pretty low ceilings, even if they are the winner of the season in terms of confessional count.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. It is back on you.
Okay. So I don't know how much of this is wish fulfillment or wishful thinking, whatever the term is here, where I want this person to get a lot of confessionals, and I can see a reason why I would give them a lot of confessionals if I had control over the editing room. I don't know if that's going to happen, but nonetheless, give me Denise Stapley.
Mm-hmm.
So my argument here for Denise is that as a therapist, she is very good at both talking to and talking about people. So ideally, she will be there for a long time, and she will be giving pithy and learned observations about them for a long time. And I do worry that, once again, she could find herself playing the Denise to someone else's Malcolm. And there are lots of Malcolms to go around on this season. But she may have that that Ben Driebergen quality where, not to the same extent, obviously, but she is just like, or maybe Kim is a better comparison here, where she is relatable enough for a big enough part of your target audience. Like I imagine the parents in the Midwestern families or whatever are going to fall in love with Denise Stapley, where, it makes sense to for her to give the generic "we just lost this challenge" confessional that has to go to somebody.
She's pretty practiced at the "we just lost this challenge" confessional.
Oh, yeah, she's got that down to a T by now.
Yeah. I'm fine with it. Honestly, at this point, anyone is a totally justifiable pick as far as I'm concerned, and just based on how good I feel about Denise's prospects being out, doing well once out there, absolutely fine with the Denise pick here. I know she, even in the timeline where she won in the Philippines, wasn't she was one of the bigger characters around the season, but certainly wasn't the biggest character on the season. And this time around, I would suspect even if she did win, she would still probably not crack maybe even the top three confessionalists of the season, but still can't really put up much of a fight with picking Denise in any capacity.
Hold on, the top three confessional lists or confessional lists? What are you going for here?
Confessional givers, as in the highest volume of confessionals, largest quantity.
Yes, purveyors of confessionals.
Yes, not necessarily. I don't mean quality. I mean just sheer numbers.
Sure. But Denise is worth noting as well. Also an underrated gossip monger, shit talker, shit stirrer. You know, despite how, you know, the, I guess she has practice of that in her professional life, actually. Like, she, you know, she was very good at that in the Philippines, and I expect her to be such again. I don't know if there are any obvious Abby's Maria for her to sink her teeth into here, but I could imagine if, like, Tony lasts for long enough, or, you know, she could have some stuff to say, for sure.
Yeah. Denise is always a lot of fun, so upset that you ended up actually taking her so I couldn't have her, but we must move on. So it is on you again.
We move on to my next
to
pick.
You.
Yeah. So not too many people left on the board here, and I guess I could just start picking based on who I want to have the most confessionals, just to try and again make that into a reality here. But give me, you know what? Give me Amber Mariana, who, if this was Amber Burkitt, winner of Survivor All Stars, would be maybe 20 out of 20 on this board here. But as Amber Mariano, wife to Prince Regent of Survivor Rob Mariano, who again is the clear number one with a bullet pick for this draft, has just come off the most recent season, who we expect to have a big storyline of some kind in this one, I could easily see some kind of inheritance edit where now that Rob has fallen, you know, she finds herself on the outs and she has to pick up that mantle and run with it. And how far can Amber go? Can she avenge her, you know, her fallen hero or whatever? And even though Amber is definitely not the most dynamic personality, confessional giver, and so on, they might just be forced to give her that stuff, however boring it may end up being, because she is the only person who could inherit that role.
Yeah, I'm definitely with that. Amber is my official winner pick for this season. She's one of the four members of the green team that I got in that auction draft, my little crew that only needs 12.5% equity to be profitable. I'm really hoping Amber can be one of the people that pulls through there, and I'm with you. I think that just by virtue of being Boston Rob's wife, that's going to be worth at least something. And furthermore, Amber seems to me like in a deceptively good kind of spot under the right circumstances to be going deep. So, well, again, she's not going to be someone who is virtually ever going to be near the top of the board, even in timelines where she makes the finale in terms of total confessionals on the season. I think she is at this point in the draft going to be decent enough value just based on how likely she is to be going deep, I would guess.
Yeah, and in the event that, let's say, Rob sacrifices himself for Amber or something like that, or she gets her a challenge to find the news that Rob has been voted out, I imagine Rob will get a lot of confessionals leading up to that moment, but Amber will as well to set the stage, and then in reaction to that, you will see and hear a lot from Amber. So even if it's just a temporary rise and fall, during that time, she's going to get a lot of focus.
Right, the Rob and Amber storyline alone is going to be worth 10 confessionals.
Right, and again, in this timeline where Rob and Amber somehow make it to the finals together or something, well, you're going to win because you have Rob, but I will be, you know, not drawing dead because I have Amber, who will hopefully shore up my title too.
At least counterbalance some of that weight. So, all right, it is back over on me, and at this point, I'm actually going to take the person I thought you were leading up to with your Denise selection and saying if you had your way, this person would get a bunch of confessionals. If I had my way, I would love to hear quite a bit from Yul Kwan this season, mostly in the context of him finding out who half these people are for the first time and hearing his first impressions of some of these other clowns who've gone on to win Survivor. But Yul is a fascinating guy as far as I've ever been concerned, and definitely, I hope at least, going to be able to shed some light on the ways the game has changed over the years. I think he could be another person like Ethan, really holding it down, getting the old school kind of representation.
Yeah, for someone who had the most overpowered idol in the history of Survivor to be thrown into this brave new world full of idols and advantages being thrown around every single episode, I imagine it's going to be a real adjustment for him, and one that he might get a chance to comment on, you know, the way that the game has changed since he last played. But my issue with Yul, firstly, is that management consultants, by and large, do not give good confessionals. I think that's an iron law that we can lock in place with very few exceptions there.
I mean, I think it would be literally called the Yul Kwan law, too.
Right. And he is good proof of his own lore, I guess. I love hearing from Yule, but he has this very dry analytical style, which I don't know if that can carry the moment. But when the music is blaring in the background, it seems kind of jarring if Yule is giving this entirely methodical, lawyerly breakdown of dispassionately of everything that just happened. And again, if we're looking at the shit talker power rankings, Yule is a firm 20 out of 20 on that list. Like, even when he is talking about someone with venom, who he absolutely despises, he always makes it sound very political. And I imagine when Yule eventually runs for president 8 years from now, you know, his confessional count on Survivor will be the last thing anyone cares about. But for the purposes of this draft, I don't see Yule really adding much to his team.
It was more... I find Yule interesting, so at this point, Yule it is.
And that's perfectly reasonable. I've made several picks on that basis already. We'll make several more on that basis, too. I guess the only other concern is that my worry is that Yule will end up as, like, the Tom Westman of this season, where just not being part of that social politicking pregame and standing out as one of the most obvious threats outside of that, Yule might just be swimming upstream from the very first moment.
Oh, I think Yule and Colby, or excuse me, Yule and Ethan could be Tom and Colby 2.0.
And I'm here for it, but I'm not here for it because it means they're getting voted out early. Or at least, you know, at least Yule would be in this parallel.
Yeah, I definitely could see that being a factor for sure. And again, I am not thinking that Yule is going to be one of the main go-tos for the editors in terms of confessionals, but at this point that I guess is maybe just wishful thinking more so than anything else, but who cares. And with my next pick, I think it may be even more of the same. I am going to go with someone who was a little underserved her first time around, but for many, many years was my number one funniest survivor on Twitter until Gabby Pascuzzi came and took the game by storm. Sophie G. Clark, come on down, who will be the final pick I actually get to make in this draft. Dom's going to make two more picks, and then I will get the default. But as I said, I think Sophie is actually someone who we could see a whole different side of. I think she is hysterical in other outside of South Pacific contexts. And I think this time around, having a win already under her belt, knowing some of these people, feeling good about her chances of going deep potentially again, I think Sophie could be coming out really swinging a lot harder this time, both on within the game and on the confessionals.
Okay, the issue is, for better or for worse, the average Survivor viewer is not you, and therefore they are not madly in love with Sophie Clark the way that you might be. So I could see her, a lot of prime Sophie content ending up on the cutting room floor, much to your chagrin.
We met Sophie Clark at a live know-it-all's great friend of the podcast, patron of the podcast, Mike Botta, knows her and introduced us, and she came over. And he was like, hey, this is Dom and Colin. And she looked at me and she goes, Dom? And I was like, no. And she goes, oh, which one's Dom? I got to go find Dom.
That is definitely not how it happened.
That is 100% how it happened.
That's definitely how I wanted it to have happened. I would like to imagine it happened.
She could not have been more disappointed that you weren't there and it was just me.
She really just wants you to be me because you have the whole package going, and you know.
I think it's the opposite.
Okay.
All right. So welcome to the team, Sophie. Even though she would obviously rather be on Dom's team.
Who wouldn't, really? Sophie speaking for the audience there. But yeah. Coming back to me, so I now have to pick between Sarah Lucina, Danny Bowright, and Nick Wilson, and we are scraping the bottom of the barrel in terms of who would get even a single confessional on this season, depending on how things could go here. Give me Sarah Lucina, though, because for as much as her game in Game Changers was phenomenal, as I hope we would all agree, part of the reason that it wasn't widely recognized as such was by her own admission, because she's not the most telegenic personality. She's not giving great confessionals. She's not jumping off the screen at you. She's not doing things in the game that are going to draw attention to herself that she then will have a chance to comment on. So I could see her firstly just being a big target out there anyway. She definitely should be by all standards. But even if she isn't, she might be forced into playing this low-key role where she's not going to have much to comment on, and they're not going to find excuses or go out of their way to give her those things. So why even give her a confessional in the first place?
Yeah, I could see her being in there, you know, if she is making another deep run, becoming something of a go-to narrator, just kind of picking up on her story from the first time around in Game Changers, because I do think she closed that one out really strong and would be one of the more recognizable people for the casual fans, and that could be something CBS may lean on. But that being said, there's still, I would say, plenty of timelines where Sarah just doesn't get into too great of a situation off the bat. And if she doesn't become kind of a power player over the course of this season, I'm not sure why they're going to Sarah Lacina for pretty much anything.
Right. And I will, I guess, decide both my team and your team's last members here and pick Nick Wilson as my final member.
Yeah, and for the record, Danny was 20 on my board as well, and I'm guessing it's for similar reasons.
Yeah, there's not much reason to talk about Nick here at 19, so let's talk about Danny at 20 instead. I think the if Rob is a mortal lock for number one, the mortal lock for number 20 is the woman who deliberately avoided giving confessionals on her season because she was worried about what production would leak to other people, which...
a decade ahead of her time.
Visionary, yeah. It seemed like a smart call back in 2005 and is not even borderline. It is mandatory here in 2019. I guess if the trade-off is you value getting attention more than you value winning Survivor, then talk away, I suppose. And I wouldn't fault people for doing that. But I think Danny really was onto something when she decided to do that. And it is a shock to me, not just because of that, but also because of coming from Guatemala, which basically nobody remembers except for the podcast patrons of the world. It's a shock to me that Danny was even in the mix to return for this season. So the fact that she is on either of our boards to be discussed and picked here in number 20 is a surprise to me. But given that she is on the board, her being 20 shouldn't be a surprise to anyone.
No, I am totally on board with everything you just laid out. I'm sure no one's too shocked who is familiar with Danny's backstory that she is going at this point in the confessional draft. I would guess Danny was, if not 10 out of 10, very close to 10 out of 10 in terms of the producer's wish list for women to bring back. And I am honestly somewhat surprised that we are getting Danny instead of Tina Wesson.
Yeah, do you think this is the kind of thing where if there were another four or five eligible female winners to choose from, then they would be here in the conversation instead?
I would guess so, yeah. If it was people other, the only real one that surprises me that was left out is Tina, that I can think of off the top of my head. But, like, I think Danny is essentially lucky that Jenna Maraska is essentially out of the running. Natalie White probably doesn't have a ton of interest, even if she were more interesting. And then whoever else is missing from the list, like Vesepia was so long ago and people forgot about her even by 2004 or whatever. So I think she is essentially really lucky that they decided they needed an even gender balance.
Yeah. So with that in mind, do you think there's a chance that Danny, given that it's been so long, could step into a new role where maybe she would get more attention? Because as the still, like, just like stunning, athletic, mid-40s woman who, she's from Kansas, right? So she's a sportscaster there. Like, the whole thing that made her relatable to her castmates back then, I think, is still going to make her relatable to a large segment of the audience. Excuse me. So she could be that, like, bargain bin Kim Spradlin, right? The person who you go to because if you want to break from the strategy, you have this, like, just very likable, wholesome figure there to carry the weight for that time.
She certainly could be, but I think they may be concerned that people would, like, confuse Danny for someone else in the cast and not want to run that risk or whatever. I think there's a ton of reason to believe in Danny as a player, as we've gone over many, many times to this point. But Danny in the confessional draft, I think, is the very understandable 20 out of 20.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So, Dom, there you have it. I will quickly run back through the teams in the order that they were selected in case anyone would be interested in such a thing. It seems like what people do at the end of draft podcasts, so why not? Team Dom is Tyson, Sandra, Natalie Anderson, Ben, Tony, Ethan, Denise, Amber, Sarah, and Nick. My team is Boston Rob, the number one, very obvious, Colin deserves no credit if that pick ends up working out pick. Along with Boston Rob, I have Jeremy, Kim, Parvati, Adam, Michelle, Wendell, Yule, Sophie, and Danny Boatwright. So $20 on the line, Dom. Total confessionals among all 10 team members. Do we want to do anything where we, like, drop the bottom two or anything like that?
No, I think keep it fully intact. Okay. Although I'm down to add on a few different riders. And the one that I thought of was, should we give a bonus for the first confessional of the season?
3-point bonus for the first confessional of the season. No, yes, because it's going to go to Boston Rob. So 20-point bonus for the first confessional of the season.
Hey, it could go to Sandra instead. You never know. But so are you saying an additional 3 points or 3 points in total?
An additional 3 points. So it will be a 4-point confessional.
I guess that is what the word bonus means, huh? Yeah, okay, let's do that.
For the first confessional of the season. That sounds good.
Yeah, anything else that seems good to you at this stage?
We can potentially adjust it later, but I'm fine. No, let's keep it with all 10 count. You got to every pick matters, and 3 bonus points on the line for the first confessional of the season, which hopefully goes to Danny Boatwright somehow after she's gone 20th out of 20 in our draft. And again, we will use whatever Pia deems the correct confessional count and take her word on that. Dom, anything else that we need to get to right now?
Yeah, apologies to Pia for the extra labor which you are foisting on her unaware, but I'm sure she will rise to that challenge. What other wacky draft ideas have you come up with to keep this inevitable cycle going?
I'm sure plenty more stuff will be coming along the way. Nothing in particular yet that I feel comfortable teasing, but I'm sure we will have plenty more in the way of ways I can take your money in the form of season 40 drafts. So definitely do stay closely tuned.
Perfect.
All right. That is going to wrap us up here today. Thank you guys, of course, as always, for supporting the show. And we will talk to you next Saturday, or if you're hearing this on the main feed, whenever the next episode on the main feed comes out, we will talk to you soon. Take care, everybody.